Chapter 16. The Hammer of Witches. 3 months in the Carnificina. Flight from Cadia. Flanked by 6 robed interrogators reading aloud from the books of pain and the chapters of punishment, Inquisitor Leonid Ozma came down the moorland slope towards me. Pink dawn light was beginning to spear lengthways across the bleak heath, and the gorse and bracken was stirred by the early morning breeze. Distantly, heath grouse and tarkerns were whooping and calling to the midwinter sun. Ozma was a well-built, broad-shouldered man in his 150s. He wore brass power armor that glowed almost orange in the ruddy dawn. Ornate Malleus crests decorated his armor's besagues and pollions, and 6 purity seals were threaded around his beaver like a floral wreath. A long cloak of white fur played out behind him, brushing the tops of the heather and gorse. His face was blunt and pugnacious. His eyes were glinting dots set in puffy lids, fringed by heavy gray eyebrows. His bowl-cut hair was the color of sword metal. Some years before, he had lost his lower jaw during a fight with a cornate berserker. The augmetic replacement was a jutting chin of chrome, linked into his skull by feed tubes and microservos. The emblem of the Inquisition rose above his head, on a standard mounted between his shoulder blades. In one hand he carried a power hammer, the mark of his ordo. In the other, a sealed ebony scroll tube. I recognized it at once, a Carta Extremis.
"This is insanity," Fischig growled.
The Cadians around us stiffened and jabbed with their weapons.
"Enough,"
I warned Fischig. I turned to my companions. They looked so lost, so miserable, so dismayed. "We will not fight our own," I told them. "Surrender your weapons. I will soon have this laughable error resolved." Bequin and Inchabel handed their weapons to the Cadian guards. Fischig reluctantly allowed the stormtroopers to divorce him from his riot gun. Nail unclipped his drum cannon's ammo feed, slid out the magazine box, and passed that to the waiting troops, leaving the disabled heavy weapon strapped around his torso on its harness. I nodded, satisfied.
"Thorn bids Aegis by cool water, soft,"
I whispered into my vox, and then turned to meet Ozma. He raised his power hammer in a brief gesture, and the mumbling interrogators fell silent and closed their books.
"Gregor Eisenhorn," he said in precisely enunciated high formal Gothic, "in fealty to the God Emperor, our undying lord, and by the grace of the Golden Throne, in the name of the Ordo Malleus and the Inquisition, I call thee Diabolus, and in the testimony of thy crimes I submit this charter. May imperial justice account in all balance. The Emperor protects."
I slid my storm gun out of its holster, ejected the clip, and handed it to him, grip first. "I hear full well thy charge and thy words, and make my submission," I responded, in the ancient form. "May imperial justice account in all balance. The Emperor protects. Dost thou accept this charter from my hand?"
"I accept it into mine, for that I may prove it thrice false." "Dost thou state thy innocence now, at the going off?"
"I state it true and clear. May it be so writ down." Vox drones idling by the shoulders of the interrogators had been recording all this, but the youngest interrogator was transcribing it all with a hollow quill into a dispositional slate suspended before him on a grav plate. I noted this detail with some satisfaction. Preposterous though the charges were, Ozma was prosecuting with total and precise formality.
"I ask of thee thy badge of office," Ozma said.
"I deny thy asking. By the code of prejudice, I declare my right to retain my rank until due process is concluded." He nodded. His language changed from high formal to low Gothic.
"I expected as much. Thank you for avoiding unpleasantness."
"I don't think I've avoided any unpleasantness, Ozma. What I have avoided is bloodshed."
"This is ridiculous."
"They all say that," he muttered snidely, turning away.
"No,"
I said levelly, stopping him dead. "The guilty and the polluted fight. They deny, they struggle. In my lifetime I have brought down 9 marked Diabolus. None went quietly. Mark that fact in your record," I said to the scribing interrogator. "If I was guilty, I would not be submitting to your process so politely."
"Mark it so," Ozma told his hesitating scribe.
He looked back at me.
"Read the Carta, Eisenhorn. You're guilty as sin. This show of understanding and cooperation is exactly what I would have expected from a being as canny and clever as you. A compliment, Ozma. He spat into the bracken. You were one of the best, Eisenhorn. Lord Rawkin actually pleaded for you. I acknowledge your past triumphs, but you have been turned. You are Malleus. You are an abomination, and you will pay.
This is insane,
Neve muttered, limping towards us. And none of your business, Inquisitor General, Ozma replied. Neve faced him, her torn armor wet with her own blood.
This is my province, Inquisitor. Eisenhorn has proved himself to me. This charade is interfering with Inquisition business.
Read the Carta, Inquisitor General, Ozma told her, and shut up. Eisenhorn is clever and convincing. He has fooled you, lady. Be thankful that you're not implicated. My companions were arraigned at Khazad Dirth, under Neve's recognizance. No such luxury for me. I was flown south aboard a Cadian military lighter, through the Dawn, to the furthest islet of the Caducades group, to the infamous Cadian prison, the Carnificina. They had fettered my hands and feet. I sat on a bracket bench dropped from the wall of the lighter's armored hold, surrounded by Cadian guards, and read the Carta by the shifting light that sheered in through the window slits. I could scarcely believe what I was reading.
Well,
grunted Fischig from his seat in the corner. I had been allowed one spokesman, and I had selected Fischig with his legal background. Read it, I said, holding the Carta out to him. One of the impassive Cadians took it from me and passed it to the scowling Hubrusian. After a few moments spent reviewing the scroll, Fischig blurted out an incredulous profanity. Just what I thought, I said. The Carnificina jutted up from the thrashing sea like the molar of a massive herbivore, the gum eaten away. It had not been built so much as hollowed out of the upthrust crag. There wasn't a wall on the prison aisle thinner than 5 meters. Vicious plungers broke in white spray around its granite base, and the western aspects were open to the worst of the pelagic abuse from the oceans beyond. Icebergs from the calving glaciers at Cadieux Sound and the distant Caducades Isthmus jostled and splintered in the open water between the prison aisle and the barren atolls opposing it. Kelp and hardy lean axle trees decorated its lower slopes. The lighter swung in over the eastern ramparts and settled on a pad cut from the stone. I was marched under guard out into the cold sunlight, and then into the dank hallways of the rock. The whitewashed walls sweated and stank of seawater. Rusting chains ran down from the ceiling to the hatches of forgotten oubliettes. I could hear the shouts and screams of prisoners. The demented and infected of the Cadians lived here, mostly ex-servicemen who had been driven mad in the wars of the Eye. The Cadian troops handed me over to a squad of red-uniformed prison guards who reeked of unwashed flesh and carried pain flails and leather whips. They opened up a 50-centimeter-thick hatch cover, riven with studs, and pushed me into a cell. It was 4 paces by 4, cut from stone, with no window. It stank of piss. The previous incumbent had died here, and never been removed. I pushed aside his dry bones and sat on the wooden bunk. I knew nothing. I had no idea if the Cadian interior had captured that rogue starship, or if anyone had managed to track the flight of the thing that had been poor Hussman. The path to Quixos, the path we had been so lucky to strike at last, was disappearing by the second as we played these games, and there was nothing I could do about it.
When did you first decide to consort with demons? Asked Interrogator Rigri.
I have never done so. Or decided to do so.
But the demon host Terubiel knows you by name, said Interrogator Palfier.
Is that a question?
It,
Palfier stammered.
What is your relationship with the demon host Terubiel? Cut in Interrogator Moyag sternly.
I have no relationship with any demon host, I replied. I was chained to a wooden chair in the great hall of the Carnificina, winter sunlight shafting down from the high windows. Ozma's 3 interrogators stalked around me like caged beasts, their robes swirling in the draught.
It knows your name, Moyag said testily.
I know yours, Moyag. Does that give me power over you?
How did you orchestrate the atrocity at Thracian Hive Primaris? Asked Palfier.
I didn't. Next question.
Do you know who did?
Asked Rigri. Not precisely, but I believe it was the being you have referred to. Cherubael. He has been in your life before. I have thwarted him before. 100 years ago, at 56 Izar. You must have the records. Rigri glanced at his colleagues before replying. We do. But you have been searching for him ever since. Yes, as a matter of duty. Cherubael is a repellent abomination. Do you wonder that I would seek him out? Not all your contacts with him have been recorded. What? We know some contacts have remained secret, Moyag rephrased. How? The sworn testimony of an Alan von Beig. He states that you sent an operative codenamed Hound out to make contact with Cherubael 1 year ago, and that you refrained from telling your Ordo master about it. I didn't think to bother Lord Rorkin with the matter. So, you don't deny it? Deny what? Hunting for chaos? No, I don't. In secret. What Inquisitor doesn't work in secret?
Who is Hound?
Asked Palfir. I had no wish to make Fischig's life more difficult just then. I said, I don't know his real name. He works clandestinely. I thought they would press me, but instead, Moyag said, Why did you survive the Thracian horror? I was lucky. Palfir walked a circle around me, his polished boots squeaking on the worn floor.
Let me make it clear. We are just beginning here. In respect to your rank and career, we are employing interrogation of the first action. The first action is...
I cut him short. I have been an inquisitor for many years, Palfir. I know what the first action is. Verbal interview without duress.
Then you know of the third and fifth actions, sneered Rigri.
Light physical torture and psychic interrogation, and by the way, you just utilize the second action, verbal threat of and or description of actions that may follow.
Have you ever been tortured, Eisenhorn? Asked Moyag.
Yes, by less squeamish men than you. And I have been interrogated, too. Second action methods really won't work on me.
Inquisitor Ozma has authorized us to use any methods up to and including ninth action, spat Palfir.
Again, a threat. Second action. It won't work on me, I told you that. I'm trying to be cooperative.
Who is Hound?
Asked Rigri. Ah, there it was. The follow-up, designed to wrong foot by coming out of sequence. For a moment, I began to admire their interrogation skills. I don't know his real name. He works clandestinely.
Is it not Godwin Fischig, the man you chose as your second here? The man who waits outside this chamber?
There are times when the injuries Gorgon Locke did to my face on Gudrun have their benefits. My face simply couldn't show the reaction they were hoping to see. But inside I balked. Their intelligence was good, good enough to have cracked Glossier, if only partially. I was sure of the source. They had already mentioned that weasel von Beig. Months before, on Thracian, right before the atrocity, I had begun to suspect von Beig. At that time, I merely assumed he was Lord Rorkin's plant to watch over me. Now I realized he was happy to talk to anyone. I had recognized von Beig's weakness and stalled his career. Clearly, he had decided to seek advancement from other inquisitors by selling me out. If you are telling me Fischig is the operative I know as Hound, I am truly surprised, I replied levelly, choosing my words with extreme care.
We will talk to him in time, said Palfir.
Not while he is my recognized second. That would break the code of prejudice. If you wish to interview him, I must be allowed a new second, of my choosing.
We will get to that, said Rigri.
Why did you survive the Thracian horror? Asked Moyag.
I was lucky.
Explain lucky.
I had stopped to honor the tomb of the Admiral. The Spacian Gate protected me from the airstrikes. After the lies Cherubael had told me on Ichan, I dreaded this question coming up again under psychic interview. The lies, or at least my attempts to screen them, would be picked up.
The atrocity was simply cover to allow you to liberate and remove from Thracian the heretic psyker Isaradon.
I would normally address that notion with scorn. If the entire event had been staged simply to launder the psyker, then it was inhumanly wasteful. However, I believe in some regards you are right. That's what the atrocity was engineered to do, but not by me. Moyag licked his yellowing teeth eagerly.
You maintained that it was, in fact, Interrogator Lyko who executed the event,
in collaboration with the demon host.
But Lyco cannot answer those charges, can he? Because you killed him on Ichan.
I executed Lyco on Ichan as a traitor enemy of the Imperium.
I submit to you that you killed him because he was onto you. You killed him to silence him.
Do I really have to be here? You're doing a fine job of making up your own answers.
Where is Asaradon?
Wherever Cherubael took him.
And where is that?
Asked Palfir. I shrugged.
To his master, Quixos.
All three of them laughed.
Quixos is dead. He died long ago,
Moyag chuckled. Then why did the Inquisitor General and I find that he had been manipulating her codes to gain access to Cadian airspace?
Because that's how you made it look. You say Quixos used his power to steal her authority code. If that's true, then it's a crime any deviant Inquisitor of renown could manage. You could manage it, and using a dead man's code means no one is going to object.
Quixos isn't dead, I cleared my throat. Quixos is Hereticus and Extremis Diabolus. He has perverted Inquisitors such as Lyco and Molitor into his service. He uses demon hosts. He triggers holocausts to cover his theft of Alpha Plus class psychers. The three interrogators fell silent for a moment.
We are wasting time here, I said. I am not the man you want.
But the time-wasting continued. A week passed, then a second. Every day I was taken to the Great Hall and subjected to anything from 2 to 6 hours of first-action interview. The questions were repeated so many times, I became sick of hearing them. None of the interrogators seemed to listen to my statements. As far as I knew, no part of my story was being checked out. They were clearly wary of escalating to physical or psychic means of extraction. Because I was a psyker, I could at least make things difficult enough so that they'd never know how much of what they were getting out of me was true. Ozma had evidently decided to wear me down with endless cycles of verbal cross-examination. For 15 minutes each evening, with the ocean light fading, I was allowed to speak with Fischig. These conversations were pointless. The cell areas were undoubtedly laced with vox thieves and listening devices, and as far as we knew, Glossier was compromised. Fischig could tell me little, although I was able to learn that Medea, Amos, and the Guncutter were not in Ozma's hands, and neither was the SN. There had been no further sighting of Profanity Hussman, and Fischig was certain that the mystery starship that had delivered Profanity to Cadia had not been intercepted that fateful night. Through Fischig's agency, I sent petitions to Ozma, to Rorkon, and to Neve, protesting my arrest and urging them to take further action regarding Quixos. No word came back. Candlemas was long past. 3 more weeks went by. I realized that the year had turned. Outside the thick, bleak walls of the Carnificina, it was 3:40 M41. At the end of my 3rd month of detention and interrogation, I was led into the Great Hall for my daily interview and found Ozma waiting for me instead of the usual interrogators.
Sit,
he said, gesturing to the chair in the center of the stark room. It was dark and cold. Bitter late winter storms were pushing in from the east, and though it was day, no light came from the high windows. They were muffled with snow. My breath steamed in the air, and I shivered. Ozma had arranged 6 lamps around the edges of the room. I sat down, pushing my hands into the pockets of my coat against the chill. I didn't want Ozma to see my distress. He stood, warm and insulated in his burnished power armor, reviewing a data slate. I could see myself, reflected in the polished panels of his backplate. My clothes were ragged and filthy, my skin pale. I had dropped a good 7 kilos, and now sported a thick beard as unruly as my hair. The only item in my possession was the inquisitorial rosette in my coat pocket. It comforted me. Ozma turned to face me.
In 3 months, your story has not changed. That should tell you something. It tells me you have great reserves of strength and a careful mind. Or that I'm not lying.
He put the slate down on one of the lamp tables.
Let me explain to you what is going to happen. Lord Rorkon has persuaded Grandmaster Orsini to have you extradited to Thracian Primaris. There you will stand trial for the charges in the Carta Extremis before a magistrate tribunal of the Ordo Malleus and the Officio of Internal Prosecution. Rorkon isn't happy, but it is all Orsini would allow. Rorkon, I have heard, feels that your innocence, or guilt, can be ascertained once and for all in a formal trial.
The result of that trial may embarrass you and your master, Lord Bezier. He laughed.
In truth, I would welcome such embarrassment if it meant the exoneration of a valuable inquisitor like you, Eisenhorn. But I don't think it will. You will burn on Thracian for this, Eisenhorn, as surely as you would have done here.
I'll take my chances, Ozma. He nodded.
So will I. The black ships will arrive in 3 days' time to conduct you to Thracian Primaris. That gives me 3 days to break you before the matter is taken out of my hands.
Be careful, Ozma.
I am always careful. Tomorrow my staff will begin 9th action examination of you. There will be no respite until the black ships arrive, or you tell me what I want to hear. 2 days of 9th action methods will probably guarantee I won't be alive when the black ships come. Probably. A shame. And questions will be asked. But this is a lonely prison, and I am in charge. That is why today, I'm just talking to you. Just you and me. A last chance. Tell me the whole truth now, Eisenhorn, man to man. Make this easy on us both. Confess your crimes before the pain begins tomorrow. Spare us the trial on Thracian, and I'll do everything in my power to ensure your execution is quick and painless.
I'll gladly tell you the truth. His eyes brightened. It's all there, on that slate you were reading. Exactly as I have been saying these last 3 months. When the guards took me back to my frigid cell, down stone hallways where the ocean gales moaned, Fischig was waiting for me. Our daily 15 minutes. He had brought a lamp and a tray with my night meal. Thin, tepid fish broth and stale hunks of rusk bread with a glass of watered rum. I sat down on the crude bunk. I'm to be extradited for trial, I told him. He nodded.
But I understand tomorrow the pain work begins. I filed a protest, but I'm sure it'll be accidentally lost in the trash.
I'm sure it will.
You should eat, he said.
I'm not hungry.
Just eat. You'll need your strength, and from the look of you, you've precious little of that.
I shook my head.
Gregor, he said, dropping his voice, I have a question to ask you. You won't like it much, but it's important.
Important?
To me. And to your friends.
Ask it.
Do you remember, God Emperor, but it seems so long ago, last year, when we met up again, at that grave field outside Casa Tyrock?
Of course.
In the Shrine Tower, you said to me that you couldn't conceive of doing anything that would please or benefit a demon. You said, I can't ever imagine myself that insane.
I remember it clearly. You said that if you ever thought I was, you'd shoot me yourself. He nodded, with a sour chuckle. There was a moment of silence, broken only by the crackling of the lamp and the boom of the sea outside the prison ramparts.
You want to be sure, don't you, Godwin?
I asked. He looked at me reproachfully. I can understand that. I expect total loyalty from you and all my staff. You have the right to be assured of the same from me.
Then you know my question.
I fixed him with my eyes. You want to ask if I'm lying, if there's any truth to the charges. If you have been working for a man who consorts with demons.
It's a stupid question, I know. If you are those things, you won't hesitate to lie again now.
I'm too tired for anything but the truth, Godwin. I swear, by the Golden Throne, I am not what Ozma says I am. I am a true servant of the Emperor and the Inquisition.
Find me an eagle, and I'll swear on that, too.
I don't know what else I can do to convince you. He got to his feet.
That's enough for me. I just wanted to be sure. Your word has always been enough, and after all the years we've been together, I was sure that you'd tell me if... Even if it was...
Know this, old friend, I would. Even if I was the scum Ozma believes me to be, and even if I could hide it from him, I couldn't lie to a direct question from you.
Not you,
Chasener Fischig. The guard rapped on the cell door.
1 minute more! Fischig shouted. Eat your supper,
he said to me. Did Ozma put you up to this? I asked.
Hell no,
he snarled, offended. It's all right. I didn't think so. The guard hammered again.
All right, damn your eyes,
Fischig growled.
I'll see you tomorrow, I said.
Yeah, he replied.
Do one thing for me.
Name it.
Eat your supper.
The cramps began just after what I guessed was midnight. They woke me from a bad sleep. Pain surged through my body and my mind was numb. I hadn't felt this bad since Pi's handiwork on Lethe 11, during the dark night almost 2 whole years before. I tried to rise and fell off the bunk. Spasms racked me, and I cried out. I vomited up the dregs of the dire supper. Bouts of fever heat and death chill twitched through me. I don't know how long it took for me to crawl to the cell door, or how long I lay there, beating my fists against it until it opened. Hours, possibly. Consciousness ebbed and flowed with the cramping and the rising agony.
"Holy Emperor!"
the guard exclaimed as he opened the door and saw me by the light of his rush lamp. He called out, and feet came beating down the cellway.
"He's sick,"
I heard the guard say.
"Leave him till morning,"
said another.
"He'll be dead,"
the first guard answered nervously.
"Please,"
I stammered, reaching out my hand. It was frozen in a claw shape, paralyzed and ugly. Others were arriving. I heard Fischig's voice.
"He needs a doctor, trained Medicaid help," Fischig said.
"It's not allowed,"
complained a guard.
"Look at him, man. He's dying. An attack of some sort."
"Let me through,"
said another voice. It was the prison medic, accompanied by interrogator Rigri, who looked as if he had been roused from his bed.
"He's faking it. Leave him," Rigri said contemptuously. "Shut up," Fischig snarled. "Look at him. That's no act." "He's a master of deception," Rigri returned. "Maybe he's been licking the lead paint off the door to aid his act. More fool him. This is a sham. Leave him. He's dying," said Fischig.
"He looks bloody sick," said a guard uncomfortably.
More cramping spasms twisted me involuntarily. The doctor was hunched over me. I could hear the beeping of the Medicaid Auspex he'd taken from his pharmacopoeia.
"This is no act," he muttered. "His body's in seizure. You can't fake muscle binding like that. Blood oxygen is down to 30% and his heart is defibrillating. He'll be dead in less than an hour."
"Give him a shot. Fix him," Rigri yelled.
"I can't, sir. Not here. We haven't got the facilities. Oh, Emperor, look. He's bleeding out now, from the eyes and nose."
"Do something," Rigri screamed.
"We have to get him to an infirmary. Kazadirth is the nearest. We have to get him there quickly or he's dead."
"That's ridiculous, Doctor," said Rigri. "You must be able to do something."
"Not here."
"Call up a flight, Rigri," Fischig said. "He's a primary level prisoner of the Inquisition. We can't just take him out of here." "Then get Ozma. He's gone back to the mainland for the night."
Fischig's voice was low.
"Are you going to be the one to tell Ozma you let his prize captive die on the floor of his cell?" "No." "I'll tell him then. I'll tell Ozma that his man Rigri cheated him out of the greatest prosecution of his career because he couldn't be bothered to authorize transport, and thus let Eisenhorn die of toxic shock in this prison stack." "Call up transport," Rigri shouted at the guards. "Now!"
They carried me up the stone-cut landing pad on a stretcher. Voices yelled and argued in the biting wind and blizzard-filled darkness. The medic had fixed up an intravenous drip and was trying to slow my symptoms with a few drugs from his kit. The pad lights flickered on, cold and white, and backlit the swirling snow into black dots. Acadian shuttle came in low, its attitude thrusters shaking the pad and swirling the snowfall in random directions. They carried me into the green-lit interior, and the worst of the cold and weather was stolen away as the hatch shut. I felt the sudden yaw of the ship as we lifted up and turned away towards the mainland. Fischig loomed over me, adjusting the restraining straps that held me into the shuttle's cot. Over the roar of the engines, I could hear Rigri shouting at the pilot. Covertly, Fischig slid an injector vial from his coat and fixed it into the intravenous rig in place of the prison doctor's injector. I began to feel better almost at once.
"Stay still and breathe slowly," Fischig whispered, "and hold on tight. Things are about to get bumpy."
"Contact, 3 kilometers and coming in hard," I heard the co-pilot blurt.
"What the hell is that?"
Rigri demanded. There was a pinging sound from the shuttle's transponder.
"Throne of Earth, they've got a target lock on us," exclaimed the pilot.
"Attention, shuttle," a voice crackled over the open vox. "Set down on the islet west 52x36. Now, or I will shoot you out of the air."
My vision was settling now. I looked across the green-lit cabin and saw Rigri pull a las pistol.
"What treachery is this?"
he asked, looking at Fischig.
"I think you should do as you were asked, and set down right now," said Fischig calmly.
Rigri made to fire the pistol, but there was a searing flash of light. Fischig burned Rigri with a blast from the digi-weapon built into the Jokero-made ring on his right index finger. An item of Maxilla's jewellery, I realized. Fischig fired another shot that vaporized the Vox system.
Down!
He ordered the pilot, pointing the ring at him. The shuttle made emergency groundfall in a snowstorm on the rocky beach of the uninhabited islet.
Hands on your heads,
Fischig ordered the crewman as he bundled me out of the hatch and into the blizzard. I could barely walk, and he had to support me.
You poisoned me, I gasped.
I had to make it convincing. Amos prepared a dose that would reactivate the binary poison in your body. Pi's poison.
You bastards.
Huh, a man who can curse is far from dead. Come on.
He half carried me across the shingle into the oceanic gale, snowflakes stinging our faces. Lights swooped down ahead of us as the gun cutter came in, executing a perfect Betancourt-style landing on the icy shingle. Fischig bundled me up the landing ramp into the arms of Bequin and Inchabel.
Dear Lord, have you thought this through?
I wheezed.
Of course we have, Bequin snapped. Nathan, get a booster shot of antivenin.
For the second time in under 2 years, I was dead. From binary poison at the hands of Beldame Sadia's henchmen on Lethe, and now dead in a shuttle crash, brought down in a winter storm over the Caducades on Cadia. The gun cutter lofted from the beach, ran the length of it, and then came back towards the downed shuttle. May the Emperor forgive me and my staff for the deaths of Rigri and the two flight crew. Their deaths were the only way I could maintain my security.
Fire,
I heard Nail tell Medea. The gun cutter's ordnance strafed the Cadian shuttle and blew it apart. By dawn, the jetsam along the remote islet's shore would suggest nothing but a tragic crash caused by the hellish storms. We banked up through the cover of the storms towards orbital space. Though no one told me, I knew our flight plan was covered by someone else's authority code. Neves was my guess, probably with her permission. The SN was waiting for us.
Now what?
I asked Fischig, hoarsely.
Damn it, I've risked everything I count dear to get you this far, he replied. I was kind of hoping you'd know what to do now.
Kincher,
I said. Tell Maxilla to get us to Kincher. There are some secrets that are worth keeping.
What's at Kincher?
Bequin asked. An old friend, I said.
Not a friend, exactly, added Amos.
No, Amos is right. An old associate.
Two old associates, to be specific,
Amos added. Bequin pulled a particularly angry face.
You pair in your old intimacies. Why don't you ever give a straight answer?
Because the less you know, the less the Inquisition can harm you if we're caught, I said.
The new lean you,
syrupped Maxilla as I walked onto the SN's bridge. I had shaved away my beard, had my ragged hair clipped back, and dressed in a suit of black linen after my shower. I was still terribly weak on my feet, and in no mind for Maxilla's foolery.
Course is set for Kincher,
Maxilla said stiffly, apparently recognizing my mood. His gold-masked servitors chimed in agreement. His hooded navigator, all senses fixed on some different, quite other place, said nothing.
I have a question,
said Inchabel. He was seated at secondary navigation position, reviewing the star maps.
Why Kincher? A mining world out in the edges of the segmentum, almost a halo star.
I thought we'd be trying to find Quixos. There's no point.
What?
Maxilla and Inchabel asked, almost in unison. I sat down on a padded leather seat. Why make the endeavor to find Quixos when he would surely kill us at a stroke? We've barely survived individual encounters with two of his demon hosts. We haven't the strength to fight him.
So?
Asked Inchabel.
So the first thing we do is find the strength. Prepare. Arm ourselves. Make ourselves ready to take down one of the most powerful evils in the Imperium.
And for that we need to go to Kincher?
Inchabel whispered.
Kincher's the start, Nathan, I said. Trust me.